Hi there! Welcome to Explain This, a podcast where we try to explain complex things in simpler ways for people of all ages. I'm your host, Jen Kim, and today we're going to talk about our new machine overlords, artificial intelligence. I'm kidding, we're not being taken over by the machines. Yet. Anywho, let's get started. Artificial intelligence, or AI, isn't really a new topic. Science fiction writers have been talking about how future humans might use and depend on thinking machines that can ease the burden of life, taking over our menial and dangerous jobs so that we can live in a land of plenty. Or they might become more intelligent than us and realize that they don't really need us, so they wipe us out or enslave us. Whichever way you slice it, people have been fascinated with the concept that we might one day create an artificial intelligence that can truly think for itself. And now in 2023, the topic is hotter than it ever has been, as the march of progress has brought us increasingly complicated and almost magical-seeming programs such as TikTok algorithms and ChatGPT. How do these lines of code appear to read our minds and provide us exactly the content that we crave for? How do they speak so naturally when just a couple years ago, Siri couldn't even understand New Zealand accents? What's really happening under the hood of these helpful little bots? We'll talk about all of that and more in today's episode, but before we begin, I should explain that the topic of artificial intelligence is way too broad and complex to cover in one episode. That would be like explaining what chemistry is to someone. In fact, we don't even have a good definition for what intelligence is, let alone what AI actually refers to. Is your Google Assistant an AI? Is a washing machine with fuzzy logic AI? Is mayonnaise an AI? Because of this, we're going to focus specifically on two types of AI that are super relevant currently, and how they work. Neural networks, and large language models such as ChatGPT. So, with that in mind, let's explain what neural networks are and how they work to you, as if you're a child. We've talked a lot on this podcast about how your brain is like a meaty supercomputer, made up of a tangle of around 100 billion brain cells. These special cells, called neurons, act like electrical switches. They can be poked the right way, which turns them on. And then they can poke other neurons that they're connected to pass on the message. Because there's 100 billion neurons all connected to each other in various ways, your brain has somewhere in the ballpark of 1 bajillion connections. Sorry, I meant quadrillion. But either way, it's a ludicrously big number that you can't even picture because it's too big for your brain. These connections between neurons and the patterns of how they are wired and lit up are what allows us to think and feel and do things with our brain. Now, even though we call our brain a supercomputer, the truth is the human brain is far more powerful and complex than any computer that we've ever invented. So, some clever scientists thought, well, why don't we just rip Mother Nature off? And they did just that. To make smarter computers, they decided to copy the way a brain works. Instead of building billions of teeny tiny robots to poke each other like neurons, they use programming to make lots of virtual neurons. But like we just said, it's not the neurons themselves that do all the hardcore thinky-thinky business. It's how they're connected to each other that matters. So how can we program these connections if we don't even understand how our own brain works? This is where the clever part of building robot brains come from. In the past, programmers would have to tell robots exactly what to do when. If this, then that. This is only useful for simple instructions. It's just not a smart approach to take when you need a bot that can do complex things like predicting what you might want to watch next on Uflix or how to talk like a normal human being. So instead of programming a bot from scratch, we can make the bots make smarter bots. First, you need a builder bot that can build a lot of really stupid bots. Turns out this part is not too hard to program because the builder bot kind of just mashes and connects lots of different e-neurons together at random and see what comes out. But most of these random bots will be useless, as you can imagine. How do we figure out which ones are useful? For this, we need the second kind of bot, a teacher bot. The teacher bot has just one job, test the new students. If you need the bots to do one thing really well, then you can make a test and an accurate answer sheet. The teacher bot doesn't have to be smart, it just has to check the students against the answer sheet. So for example, if you want to create a bot that can look at a picture and figure out if it's a dog or a pig, you can get BuilderBot to make a whole batch of random bots, then send them over to the teacher bot, who gives them all a bunch of photos of dogs and pigs. The newborn student bots try their hardest to guess which are dogs and which are pigs, but because they're so haphazardly built, they'll usually be pretty bad at it. Anyway, through sheer luck, some of them will be better than others. So, TeacherBot picks out the best scoring students, sends them to the BuilderBot for reference, and tells all the other student bots to just go home, slash it destroys them. The BuilderBot takes these bots that scored well, copies them, and makes tiny changes to them. A student bot version 1.1, if you will. These new bots go back to the TeacherBot, get tested, and only the best are selected again. This cycle repeats over and over and over until the bots become kinda good at picking out dog and pig pictures, over, say, a picture of a loaf of bread. Almost sounds like another thing that we ripped off from Mother Nature, natural selection. Or, in this case, artificial selection. Anyway, the system works, and the bots become better and better at their given job, and their scores get better over time. This is because somewhere deep in their code, their neurons have formed useful connections that identify something that helps them figure out what kind of animal they're looking at. But here's the cool, interesting thing. No one knows what those connections are or how they work. Not the student bots, the builder or teacher bots, or even the humans that made these bots in the first place. Thanks to the endless cycle of tweaking and testing, these bots have grown and trimmed their neuron connections until only useful connections are kept. And because it's all being done digitally, this cycle can be repeated millions and billions of times, with millions and billions being built, tested, and discarded all at the same time. Eventually, you end up with a bot that can reasonably accurately tell dogs and pigs apart, seemingly working in a magical way. Welcome back. Right, so as we've talked about, artificial intelligence, or AI, is a super broad term and there's many different kinds of AI with different purposes. We're going to start by talking about a specific type of AI that's been showing promise in the last couple of decades, called neural networks. You might already know that AI is being used in all kinds of places, from internet recommendations, to virtual assistants, to the stock exchanges, and chatbots. You often hear the term algorithm get thrown around, especially when it comes to social media feeds. You know how the algorithm knows what kind of videos or posts you're interested in, and recommends it to you. These algorithms are all based on neural networks, a type of AI that tries to copy the way a human brain works. As we've covered many times, the human brain works because there are billions of neurons all connected to each other in intricate ways, and the specific pattern that electricity fires through these neural networks creates instructions and thoughts and feelings and stuff. We still don't understand how the connections can produce such a vast breadth of abilities that the brain is capable of, but it doesn't stop us from doing those things, like pondering if ducks enjoy being rained on, or inventing creative nicknames for each other. The current generation of AI research focuses on the same fact. You don't have to fully understand how something works if it works reliably. Think of it as a magical black box of wishes. You feed it a question as an input, and it spits out an answer as an output. As long as the output is accurate, we don't really need to know how the black box produced that answer, right? Kind of like we don't know exactly how gravity works, but we can still reliably calculate it and send people to the moon and whatnot. So this is what AI engineers did with neural networks. Instead of programming a smart AI that can perform a task from the ground up, they created a system that would produce such an AI using three tools: the BuilderBot, the TeacherBot, and a buttload of data. Let's delve a little bit deeper on how the human brain works and develops, so you can understand neural networks better. A newborn baby is pretty stupid. I'm sorry all you baby lovers, but that's a fact. That's because a new brain is just a bundle of fresh neurons, without all the meaningful connections that make us so sophisticated and complex. For these connections to form, you need life. As the newborn baby grows, they start absorbing massive amounts of information. This is why you see little babies gawking at everything like it's the most amazing thing in the world. They're just absorbing all the data. Then, their brain starts to try making sense of the data. Is a specific shape of a face mean I should trust them, or I should cry at them? Is it safe to put in my mouth? What kind of sound should I make to get praised? So the baby's brain tries out countless iterations of connecting neurons in various ways, seeing what patterns work. Some patterns will result in some stupid behavior, like falling forwards. The brain goes, oops, that one didn't really work, let's try it a different way. But some parents will do something that gets rewarded, such as yummy food in the mouth, or the all-knowing parent figure showering you with love, which makes you feel whole and safe for some mysterious reason. The brain likes that, so it says, okay, let's keep that pattern and use it again another time. So baby learns to say mama over and over. This is a gross simplification of what's going on in your brain, but in a sense, that's how baby brains grow. Eventually, they become complex enough to talk and think and understand things. Then they can be taught specific things like rules and etiquette and how to play piano and how to ride a bike and whether you should say effect or affect in a given situation. Alright, so back to machine brains. We talked about three important parts to making neural networks. You need a builder bot that will create the connections between the neurons. You need a teacher bot that will test whether this pattern of connections will let the AI do the job you want it. Lastly, you need lots of data so that the teacher bot knows how to test the AI. Just like a newborn baby, the first batch of AI that builder bot makes is just random connections between random nodes and neurons. We're talking random stuff like, if the picture is square and it is Tuesday, then potato. Either way, the dumb new AI gets sent to the teacher bot, who has the one job of testing if the newly built AI can do the job the human overlords want. The teacher bot is given specific instructions on how to test the AI, using the buttload of data. This might involve pre-approved marking sheets, like pictures tagged correctly as pigs or dogs. Side note, you know all of those CAPTCHA things you have to do when you sign onto websites? Well, that's an example of how companies collect useful data that they can use to train the neural networks. Because a human has already confirmed the picture to include a traffic light, the teacher bot can mark the AI as correct if it guesses that the picture has a traffic light in it. There you go, you've been helping make AI all along, for free! Anyway, the teacher bot tests the new AIs, scores them, and only keeps the top AIs, because the rest are clearly not useful. The useless are destroyed and recycled, while the slightly better ones are sent back to BuilderBot for review. Because they were built and molded by randomness, the first generation of AIs will be getting higher scores mostly through dumb luck. But that's all we need for now. So BuilderBot will take these lucky AIs, make copies each with a few random changes, then send this new batch back to the TeacherBot. The same cycle repeats millions of times until eventually the average score of each successive generation of AI increases steadily. And remember, we're not just building 10 AIs asking 10 questions at a time, then repeating it once a day. We're talking about millions of random AIs being pumped out, all being tested with a million questions, millions of times a day. Just the sheer frequency of this eventually produces some AIs that have enough meaningful connections that they can perform the task reliably. Let's delve into this part a bit deeper, because we glossed over it in the ELI 5. We said we don't really know how these complicated neural networks work and how they figure out if something's a dog or a pig, but we understand some of the principles. The virtual neurons in a neural network aren't arranged haphazardly like spaghetti spilt on the kitchen floor. They're actually arranged in layers. Imagine that layer 1 has 3 neurons, or nodes. Let's call them A, B, and C. Layer 2 has 7 nodes, Monday through to Sunday. Layer 3 has 12 nodes, January through to December. When we talk about neural connections, we're talking about an algorithm or a flowchart that can decipher what it means when different nodes light up, and what to do next. So for example, let's say for some reason, when you have B, Wednesday, and October light up in that order, that means the picture contains a duck. Instead of figuring out this rule of B, Wednesday, October equals duck and telling an AI to look out for the pattern, we're using the builder bots and teacher bots to create an AI that has automatically figured this out. The first generation of random AI might just connect A to Monday to January, B to Tuesday to February, and C to Wednesday to March. But this misses out all of the other different patterns you could have between the three layers of nodes. Compared to this, an AI that has the connections B to Wednesday to February will score slightly better in the test because it'll see the duck more often. Eventually, modified copies of this AI will have the right connection of B, Wednesday, October equals duck, because we've selected for it in the vicious cycle of creating and destroying duck-recognizing AIs. This is useful because a lot of times, we don't know why A equals B. We don't know why that bird is a duck, just that it looks and sounds and quacks like a duck. This system lets us create AI that can generate the same kind of connections that we have in our meat brains, even if we don't know how either of those brains know what a duck is. And in reality, the neural networks that fetch the perfect video for you aren't working with 3 layers with 22 neurons total. They have hundreds of layers with billions of neurons, just like our brain. So God knows what kind of intricate patterns and connections make up those networks. This isn't surprising either, considering that the jobs we're asking AI to do are quite complex things, especially when you think of the fact that AI aren't seeing with their eyes or speaking with words. They're using numbers. Take this example of a basic neural network that can recognize handwriting to figure out what number you've drawn. First, the picture of the number is broken down into a grid of 28 by 28 pixels. Each pixel is analyzed by one neuron, meaning that we need 784 neurons just to see this number. Each pixel is then given a number score by the neuron. If it's pure black, it's 0. If it's pure white, it's 1. If it's exactly middle gray, it's 0.5. This generates a numerical value of how gray that part of the number is. Once this first layer of 784 neurons does a simple task, it activates the next layer accordingly. For example, the rule might be that only activate the next neuron if the pixel you saw is at least 0.8. By analyzing the chain of activations, the neural network might figure out by layer 14 that there's some kind of curved line on the top of the number. So is that an 8? Maybe it's a 9? Or maybe it's a 0? So it keeps working its way through the layers until it figures out that there's a circle in the top half of the number. So maybe it's an 8 or a 9, but it can't be a 0 anymore. Ultimately, by the last layer, the network will have perfectly figured out that, yes, given this combination of patterns, this number must be an 8. Essentially, each layer is adding complexity to the rule. First, you start just with what part of the picture is black and which is white. Then, you look for patterns that might mean an edge. Then, you compile the edges into a shape, like a loop. Lastly, you end up with a number. All of this just to figure out a number. Imagine how complicated the rule set must be to analyze images and recognize ducks. And that's why we need builder bots and teacher bots to force evolve AI with unbelievably complex layers and connections of neurons to figure out these rules, because we don't have time to wait 18 years for a baby bot to grow up. This is the basis of most of the so-called algorithms you see in your day-to-day life. Already they seem to be everywhere, monitoring your searches and clicks, feeding your recommendations, collecting data from your captures and preferences, while the companies who made them use the data to make increasingly accurate and addictive algorithms. But none of these companies know exactly how their products work. They just know what data they were fed and how the teacher bots were programmed to test them. Alright, so now that you know the basis of how neural networks work, let's take a short break so you can process it all, and let your neurons do some connecting and pruning. When we're back, we'll talk about the next generation of neural networks that have everyone so excited. Large language models such as ChatGPT. Although AI has always been a topic of conversation, mainly thanks to sci-fi books and movies such as 2001 A Space Odyssey, Terminator, and WALL-E, it really exploded into mainstream discussions in the past 2 to 3 years, with the rapid progression and publicizing of what are called generative AIs. You see, most AIs are asked to do a fixed, objective thing very well. This might be something like fetching you the next best autoplay video to maximize retention and keeping your eyes glued to your phone screen. It might be solving complex math problems, playing a rule-based game such as chess or Go, as Deep Blue and AlphaGo did, or even try to find the most appropriate medical diagnosis in a given situation, as Watson does. But many people will dismiss these AIs as being unthinking tools, just calculating probabilities and following rules super well. This is a well-known effect called the AI effect, where every time there's an advancement in AI and they learn how to do something new that could be considered intelligent, people dismiss it and just move the benchmark, saying, oh, that's not true intelligence, or that's just computation. I mean, surely cold machines like these couldn't have human qualities like creativity and eloquent language, right? Well, turns out, no. Grading is not a domain exclusive for human beings. Generative AIs are neural networks that have been trained to generate new content. That is, they have the ability to create things that haven't existed before. The first of these AIs that really shocked the world were art AIs, such as DALL-E, Stable Diffusion, and Midjourney, all released around 2021. These AIs are able to take a prompt from a user, such as, make an image for me that is a painting in the style of Salvador Dali that shows a creature that is part giraffe, part dragon, and part airplane. And within a surprisingly short period of time, it will do just that. And it's not just pulling an image from the internet that best matches the prompt, as Google and other search engines do. They're physically drawing a high-quality picture from scratch that fits the user's request. This was groundbreaking because people had thought AI of this capability were decades away, and they didn't think they would be this good. Like, you've probably seen examples of AI art by now, and although there are still many weaknesses, such as lines clipping through each other and the AI not being particularly good with hands and faces and text, you must still admit that they're pretty good considering it took a few minutes to generate. Compare this to entire industries built to generate art for various commercial uses, such as commissioned artists, graphic designers, and architects. We thought AI was going to be taking the quote-unquote easy physical jobs, such as truck driving and factory work, but now generative AI are already threatening the livelihood of artists. But it turned out, this was only the tip of the iceberg, because soon after that in 2022, AI company OpenAI released the now infamous ChatGPT. ChatGPT is a generative AI, much like the art-generating AIs. But instead of art, it generates words. If you haven't had the chance to try ChatGPT, you really ought to, just to see the power of generative AI and how it might impact our near future. Much like DALL-E and Stable Diffusion being able to spit out shockingly high-quality images to your demand, ChatGPT can write you virtually anything following your prompt in very human-esque, natural language. For example, you could ask it to write you a Shakespearean sonnet about the romance between Eowyn and Faramir from The Lord of the Rings. You could ask it to write you an essay detailing the cinematic techniques used in John Wick 4 at the level of a final year high school student in New Zealand. You could even ask it to write you a piece of code in a language of your choice for a specific task, and ChatGPT will just spit it out, one word at a time. It's obvious that technology like this holds great power, which means it should be used with great responsibility, because it comes with great danger and risk. But before we get into that, how do these generative AIs even work? How do we go from AI that are sorting dogs and pigs to AI writing short stories in less than 5 minutes? There are various types of generative AI out in the market currently, but most of them are based on a specific type of neural network called a transformer. And no, not the Autobots rollout kind. It's called a transformer neural network, because it trains using a heap of data, learns the relationships and patterns between the data points, then transforms it into a useful output. Now, this sounds a lot like what we've already talked about, right? Neural networks rely on teacher bots using exams based on large amounts of data to figure out how to connect the neurons up, so they get really good at a task. Well, transformers take this to a whole new level. Instead of being given an exam by a teacher bot to learn a rule set, transformers just figure out all the rules it can in a given data set. To make it easier to understand, we're going to talk specifically about ChatGPT, but the same principles apply to the other AIs we've talked about. Before we go deeper though, we do have to clarify a few things, because we're throwing around a lot of new big words today. Let's define a few things in relation to ChatGPT. ChatGPT is what we call a large language model, or LLM, which is a specific type of AI that can generate natural human-like language. It does this using a transformer neural network, which is a specific type of neural network that transforms large datasets into useful outputs. It's also a type of generative AI, which means it makes new text, not just copy something word for word. ChatGPT is sort of a spin-off of a bigger, more general AI engine called GPT 3.5, which stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer. For example, DALL-E, the art AI, also comes from GPT-3. OpenAI, the company that made the GPT engine, recently released an even more powerful, updated version called GPT-4. Alright, are we all on the same page now? So, we're going to talk about how these transformers work, but just bear in mind that whenever you hear LLM or large language model, they all pretty much work using the transformers. The easiest way to think about transformers are they're kind of like a super smart version of the let's tell a story by each person saying one word at a time, like once upon a time there was a potato, etc. They essentially study a huge bank of data, figure out patterns using statistical analysis, then uses those patterns to figure out what word should come next based on the input prompt. Don't worry, it'll make more sense in a bit. So there are two major phases in how transformers work. First, there's the pre-training, and then there's fine-tuning. The pre-training step is when the transformer neural network is fed a metric crap ton of data. How massive? Well, in the case of ChatGPT, it was fed pretty much the entirety of the internet up until 2021. Specifically, it read up all of Wikipedia, all the ebooks in the world, all the code on GitHub, and then whatever other websites it could find, such as newspapers, blogs, and other reference material from internet archives. In total, more than 300 billion words, or 570 gigabytes of text data, was fed into this AI, which it chewed on and digested for 1 year to learn as many patterns and connections it can in human language. Okay, so that's a lot of data. How does the AI even begin to sort through that? Well, remember how we said that machines don't talk in words, they talk in numbers? So what the transformer does is break down all of the data and starts labeling each bit. Kind of like when you start building a massive Lego project, you should sort all the pieces out first. The AI filters the data in chunks, called tokens. Essentially, each unique word gets a number label. All the data that was fed into GPT totals up to around 500 billion tokens. Then the AI uses something called an attention mechanism, which lets it weigh up how related a word is to another word. For example, the words burger and fries are much more closely related in the English language compared to burger and rain. If I said the mitochondria is, the word powerhouse will be much more likely to be the next word than tasty. Turns out, language is built on rules and context, and AI are really good at finding these patterns. It's like playing Hangman or Wordle and knowing that letters E, T, and A are much more frequent in the English language, so you should use them first. The actual attention mechanism is super complex, but the gist is that it can perform a detailed statistical analysis of how different words relate to other words, and how likely one word would follow another word, which the AI takes note and scores. Essentially, the pre-training makes the transformer network the most powerful autocorrect, so it knows what the most likely word should be next. But it's even more useful because the transformer adds weight for context as well. Like, if the context is a romantic poem, the words I love would be more likely to be followed by the word you, as opposed to the context of badass war movie quotes, where the words the smell of napalm might be more appropriate. Anyway, after all of this pre-training, you already have a pretty powerful AI engine that can predict what is the right thing to say when asked a specific question or prompt. But we want more than that, so we go to phase two, which is fine-tuning. Here the AI is put to the test. How well does it know the relationship between words, and how well can it establish context? Instead of teacher bots like in classical neural networks, we use human reviewers to educate the AI in this phase. In the case of GPT, the fancy name they gave this process was reinforcement training from human feedback. Essentially, they would reward the AI for giving a good answer, so that the AI would become more and more accurate with realistic language outputs. If the reviewers think the AI is giving good, appropriate answers, it gives it a reward. Pat pat on the head. Otherwise, they tell it to try again. This is repeated over and over and over again, until the AI is adequately fine-tuned. In the case of GPT, it took about 6 months of fine-tuning before they were happy with it. And by this point, GPT-3 had 170 billion connections between its neurons. Fine-tuning also allows us to do another very important thing in AI, aligning. One of the biggest issues in the field of AI is, how do we know that the AI we're creating are good? As in, how do we know that we're not creating an AI that is quote-unquote evil, or doesn't have values that we consider crucial, such as human lives matter? Like, what's to stop an AI from thinking to itself, hey, you know what? No humans, no problems. Why don't they just trigger an apocalypse to solve this problem? We want to make sure that AI are aligned with our goals and values, because otherwise, they can easily be extremely dangerous. So the human reviewers also teach this budding new AI not to be racist, bigoted, aggressive, or suggest things that can be harmful, such as how to make explosives or writing text that could be used for hateful activities. It's not a perfect system, but at least there's some effort to put safety checks into the AI. And if you think about it, this whole process is not too different from how human babies develop. When they're first learning how to walk and talk, babies are just amassing huge amounts of data through what they experience. Then, their brains learn patterns and rules through trial and error. After all of that has happened, they can be educated by other people who tell the baby not to do dangerous things, encourage doing good, correct behavior, and teach it more rules that it can apply. Cool, so let's do a quick recap of how ChatGPT and other transformer neural networks work. First, you give it an abundance of data that might be even remotely relevant to what you're trying to teach the AI. Then, the AI sifts through the data, cataloging every component of it. Then, the AI compares each component to each other, finding out how they're all related and what patterns and rules exist. Once these connections and weightings are made, human reviewers test it out and fine-tune it, encouraging correct connections and answers, while discouraging wrong or harmful answers. After all of that, the AI has quite a good understanding of how the topic of its study, such as human language, works. This lets it function as a super autocorrect, putting one word in front of another according to what it thinks is most appropriate in their context, letting it build sentences and paragraphs and even stories. In the case of other AI, such as DALL-E, it's using the same process, but with lines and shapes and colors to flesh out what it thinks is the most appropriate connection of individual bits until the full picture is produced. All thanks to ridiculous amounts of data and fine-tuning. In the case of ChatGPT, it has been public since November 2022, and OpenAI continue to use user input to fine-tune and upgrade the engine. Essentially, the more people use it, the better it's becoming. Already, more than 100 million users use ChatGPT, which makes it one of the fastest growing software in history. So, all in all, this sounds like an absolutely amazing new piece of technology, capable of so much. Surely this will progress humanity into an era of bounty and prosperity with absolutely no downsides, right? Right? Alright, now that we know how these hot new neural networks and large language models work, let's talk about how they don't work sometimes. Then we'll talk about some of the potential problems and dangers that AI pose. So firstly, it's important to note that these AI systems are not perfect. Which sounds obvious, but a lot of people completely neglect this fact. For example, when we go back to neural networks, they're trained to be great at doing something for a specific purpose. So if the task is to differentiate between pictures of dogs and pigs, it might get completely stumped when it sees a picture of a loaf of bread. In fact, it might even lie and say it's a dog because it's brown and round. Plus, if the image is upside down or part of it is missing, the neural network might get confused and not recognize what the picture is. Or what about a pig dressed up like a dog? And we haven't even addressed how videos are completely different to a picture, so the AI might be useless at looking at them. Broadly speaking, we can divide AI into three different tiers. The first are narrow AIs, such as the neural network described above. These AIs are really good at doing one or a few things, but outside of their designated purpose, they're not that useful. The second are general AIs, or AGI for Artificial General Intelligence. These are AI that have a much broader capability that can solve a wide array of problems using its intelligence. This would be closer to the AI that we see in popular media, like Jarvis from Iron Man, or HAL 9000 from 2001 A Space Odyssey, or R2-D2. So far, we're somewhere between these two tiers, where we're quite good at making useful narrow AI, and we might even be on the cusp of seeing AGIs be a reality in our lifetime. Some people have even suggested that GPT-4 might be the foundation for the first AGI. For example, GPT-4 can do all the things we talked about, such as writing stories and poetry, painting digital art, playing games, but it can also do things like passing license exams that doctors and lawyers have to take, or even deceive human beings into doing work for it, only when asked by a human user to do so, of course. There's a third tier of AI called superintelligent AIs, whose intelligence and capabilities far exceed that of human beings, and we can't even comprehend what they will be like. Thankfully, we're not close to that level yet. Anyway, because we don't have fully independent general AIs yet, all we can do is improve our narrow AIs. And as you've seen from how they work, the best way to do this is to improve the amount of data that we feed the algorithms, and to improve how we teach them. This is why we've seen data privacy become more of an issue in recent years, because companies have long recognized that data is money in this world, where you need more and more of it to train better AI. Even then, with 500 billion tokens being used to train GPT, it has many flaws. Let's explore a few. Firstly, these neural networks aren't sentient. Heck, they're not even thinking, per se. Most of how they work is based on statistical analysis and weighting, which means despite how natural their output look and how scarily accurate they seem, they don't understand what they're talking about. Let me give you an interesting example. There's an ancient board game called Go that is popular in East Asia, that has levels of complexity that make it a popular game even after thousands of years. But with the advent of AI, there are now bots that can outmatch the best human Go players, to the point that human players can't even compete with the AIs anymore. But recently, some researchers decided to test how good these bots are by attacking it. Not with baseball bats, but with another bot. First, they built an adversary bot to play against Katago, one of the top Go bots. This new bot would try all sorts of different strategies against Katago, probing it for weaknesses. Secondly, the adversary bot figured out a strategy that beat Katago consistently and reliably. It used a specific strategy called a double sandwich, surrounding Katago's pieces and completely taking over the board. Now, the funny thing is, because the fundamental principle of Go is to surround your opponent's pieces to capture them, a human player would have seen the double sandwich a mile away and played around it. But because Katago doesn't actually understand how Go works, it just knows how to play it well through a neural network training and pattern recognition, it falls prey to such a basic strategy. Using this knowledge, one of the researchers who had never played Go before crushed Katago 9 out of 10 matches. This highlights that even though we've spent this whole episode talking about how current AIs work, we don't actually know how they work. The AIs themselves don't even know. It's not like they understand the theory and apply them as we do. They just have a bunch of algorithms and flowcharts and patterns and connections that seem to work almost all the time in some mysterious way. Which feels a bit dangerous in a way, because how do we know for sure that they would still work in bizarre outlier situations? This is not too important when it comes to writing and art, but when AI eventually become involved in higher risk jobs such as driving, flying, and maybe even doctoring, there might come a day when they are left unsupervised because we trust them to be reliable, until they're not. Another significant issue with AI is something called hallucinations. You've probably heard that ChatGPT has an annoying tendency to confidently lie. Well, that's a bit of a misnomer. ChatGPT isn't intentionally lying to you for poops and giggles. It's just that because ChatGPT is simply putting one word in front of another based on what it thinks is the best sequence, it might give you false information without meaning to. And because of its natural language output, the response sounds very confident. For example, ChatGPT has been known to give the wrong statistic or make up facts such as the fact that Elon Musk is dead even when he's not. When confronted with it, it tends to defend its answers without any proof that it is correct. We still don't know exactly why hallucinations happen in AI. They surely don't seem to be due to bad data, so there must be something in their entangled process box that is causing them to output wrong information. But the problem is, because the false answers are so confidently stated, inexperienced humans might take ChatGPT for its word and publish it as truth. There was a recent case where a lawyer asked ChatGPT to give them some examples of past court cases that are relevant to their client's case, and it was found out in court that those examples and precedents were completely falsified. The case got thrown out of court, and the lawyer lost face, maybe even their license. Similarly, we're seeing AI such as ChatGPT used more and more in journalism, not to mention people using it to spread misinformation, so these are causing real-world issues. Lastly, because ChatGPT is so fascinating and useful, people aren't paying enough attention to the fact they're essentially being used as free beta testers, doing the fine-tuning on OpenAI's behalf. This implies that a not-quite-complete, properly fine-tuned AI has been unleashed on the world without much guideline or regulation on how it can be used safely. And we've seen how that worked out with the social media and the internet being unleashed on us. Anyway, this doesn't even begin to cover the other potential issues AI brings, such as how it will impact our livelihoods as more and more human jobs can be replaced by AI without any safeguarding for the people losing their jobs, how AI might be misused by people with malicious intent in forms of misinformation and cyber attacks, how we might be embarking on a slippery slope where AI might be able to do more and more autonomously without our supervision or restriction, how people are becoming increasingly reliant on automated tools rather than creating or critically thinking for themselves, such as students using ChatGPT to do their homework, etc. But hopefully now that you know how these AIs actually work, you're better informed for all the interesting discussions around AI that are happening as we speak. Because at the end of the day, this podcast isn't trying to teach you opinions. We're trying to explain complex concepts that you still need to have some understanding of to navigate through this complex world. Armed with this knowledge, you're free to learn more and more about AI or discuss with people around you what the implications and dangers of AI are. For example, I recently had some really interesting discussions with PhD students using ChatGPT to read through their dissertations and come up with objective conclusions from the data. And I've had chats with my colleagues how we could adopt generative AI in simulation scenario writing and planning. Anyway, hopefully you found all of this interesting because I think AI will be one of those fields that explode exponentially from this point on, and it will be entrenched into our daily lives deeper and deeper before we know it. So we might as well understand as much as we can, so not to be overwhelmed by it, and maximize its potential. So what did we learn today? We learned about how the human brain is made up of hundreds of billions of neurons, all connected up in unique patterns to generate a ludicrous amount of processing power, letting us be what we are. We learned that we can model this with a program to create a type of artificial intelligence called a neural network. We learned that neural networks are created through the endless cycles of builder bots making AIs with randomly connected neurons, and teacher bots testing these AIs to see how well they do in a task, with only the smartest ones being rebuilt until you have finally an AI that can do a specific task well. We learned that we now have large language models such as GPT-4 that use neural networks to generate new content such as writing and drawing. We learned how these LLMs work through something called a transformer neural network that essentially function as a very smart autocorrect based on the weighting and relationship between billions of data tokens. We learned that despite knowing how they're made, we don't really know how these neural networks do the work that they do, which is both amazing and scary. And lastly, we learned about how AI might be useful, but also dangerous without the right discussions and safeguards. So we need to keep talking about them. Well, that's it for today. It was quite a long episode that talked about several different aspects of modern AI, so we'll skip the 2-minute explains bit. Thank you for listening to Explain This, and apologies for the 1-month hiatus. Fingers crossed there won't be any more disruptions so I can continue to bring you interesting topics and explanations the first Friday of every month. I hope you've learned something interesting and maybe even useful today. We'll see you next time. Bye for now. Explain This was written and hosted by me, Jin Kim. If you'd like to suggest a topic or just send a lovely message, you can email me at explainthiscast@gmail.com or follow me on Facebook or Twitter.